All right, mate, how you doing? Welcome back to the Spencer FC podcast. It's our fifth one. It's our first one after Christmas. We had a bit of a Christmas break, and we're back for more in 2016. Before we start, I've got to say a big thank you to DreamTeamFC.com, the sponsors of the podcast. They've been making it all possible since day one, and it's been going pretty well so far. So make sure you check out DreamTeamFC.com and my articles on there as well. There's a weekly blog from yours truly on there. Now, so as I said, we've had a Christmas break. My guests today, and I say guests plural because I have two of them, are people that I've actually been on Christmas break with. We've actually done one together. You may have seen them both appearing every now and then on my channel on YouTube. They are my blood. They are brothers. Blood brothers, if you will. It's Seb and Saunders, my brothers. Hello, brothers.
Hello.
How are you?
Good, thanks. Not too bad.
Saunders, you're right?
I'm very good. Very good.
Does it annoy you that I always like Seb and Saunders? Because obviously, it's purely, because alphabetically, you're actually top dog.
Yeah.
But I'm doing it purely on age.
The way that I've always looked at it is the Christmas card principle. I've always been bottom of the Christmas card, so I just apply that through life, and I don't have a reason to be offended by it.
Save best till last.
It's age
and
beauty,
and
that's
as
not,
well, yeah.
Let's not get it twisted.
Age, yeah,
the
age,
thing
that
used
okay.
to,
used
actually,
to, age and beauty.
Right, yeah,
yes, that's why I'm always first.
There was one thing that used to bother me a bit, though, is that I think it was you, Seb, in Christmas cards and birthday cards that mum and dad used to put number one son because you were the first. And I was like, but is he really the number one
son? I don't like that.
Son?
I've never found that either.
Yeah, that's why I do it. I like to cause a reaction.
Yeah, controversial. Controversial to say the least. So what we're going to do today, guys, is apart from obviously just chat about football and what's going on and our opinions on things, we're going to get to know both of you a bit more because Seb a little bit more than Saunders, but you've both appeared a fair bit on my channel and going to be appearing more in the future. And we've never really sat down and, you know, like got to the nuts and bolts of what Seb and what Saunders is, you know. People on my channel probably have a rough idea about me. I've done things like Draw My Life and talked about it many times. I've made silly amounts of videos, so it sort of comes across eventually. But you two, maybe you're a little bit of an unknown entity still. So we're going to find out more about the enigma that is Seb and the mystery that is Saunders. And I think it just adds good context when people see you then on the channel.
Yeah. Okay.
They go, oh, that's what Saunders is about. Oh, yeah, Seb, I know this about him, etc. So we're going to find out more about that as we move on through the show. But we'll start things off. I think, first of all, let's talk about Christmas. As we had a Christmas break, there was no podcast last week. I was going to ask you how your Christmases were, but I kind of know because we were with each other, weren't we?
Mm-hmm. We were there, mate. The one thing I'll say is just a massive hole in my life without a Spencer FC podcast to listen to.
What did you do last week?
Two and three. I don't know what else to do. I just sat and stared at my podcast feed waiting for it to come.
See,
it never came.
I know for a fact that's not true because we've been talking about this, and I did tell you not to mention it, but I'm going to mention it. You gave me a good idea. The Justin Bieber strategy is a good one.
Yeah.
Basically, so we were number one. Spencer FC was number one podcast for a couple of weeks in the UK, and then something happened, which is the return of a podcast. Well, thou shall not. We'll call it. It rhymes with Beerial.
The podcast that
shall not be named returned. And listen, it's a good podcast. We're not going to try and say it's not. We've actually been listening to it. We can't lie.
Yeah.
We have been listening to it. And I was originally saying that we shouldn't plug it because it's beaten us to number one. But I think your advice was to adopt a Justin Bieber philosophy.
I think so. If you can't beat him, join him.
Can you explain the Justin Bieber strategy?
I think Justin Bieber was, you know, always struggles to get to the Christmas number one, and he realised that the charity single was probably going to
the NHS thing.
So he thought, you know what, I can be a good guy here and actually encourage people to download a charitable single and maybe get some good PR points. If you can't get the number one, then get some other benefit.
I would quite like to see the numbers behind that, though, and how much of a gap there was before he did that shout-out on Twitter. Because if that really did tip it over the edge, then surely he's always going to have the power to get number one.
True. And also, but I think the thing with Bieber, though, he does, that's just one market for him. It's the UK market. He's got number ones all over the shop.
Yeah.
I'm all about the UK market. I'm struggling. In Indonesia, I'm struggling right now, okay? The sales, the downloads in Russia,
in
they're
Korea,
not good. Though. Yeah, I mean, let's face it, I'm not Bieber yet. But, no, Justin Bieber, yeah, he did shout out the NHS thing. So, listen, if you want to listen to Serial, it's fine. It's very different. Doesn't talk about football. They talk more about crime and controversy. Maybe we suggested we could add an element of that. So do you know about any ongoing...
Let's just talk about Blatter.
Yeah,
that's pretty much solved, though. That's
imagine
not,
Serial...
It's no mystery.
But still, though, you say that, they thought Adnan Syed was solved.
Yeah. Hang on a minute, don't
happened.
Say anything. I haven't finished it yet. I don't want any spoilers here.
No, I don't need to, mate. It's rubbish.
We just need someone on the inside of FIFA to get in touch and tell us about all their dirty doings.
Because imagine that Serial week by week... And we can get the little music in the background. Like, Saunders, you could compose something.
I
I'll be like, welcome to Spencer FC. One story told week by week about Seb Blatter.
That's pretty good. That's not a bad accent.
Well, let us know on Twitter if you think that's a good idea. At Spencer Owen.
I actually just thought of something. If there's somebody out there, this could be a bit of an appeal here. You actually made a good point there, Saunders. there's like these Twitter accounts or blogs and things like The Secret Footballer, The Secret City Trader, The Secret Golf Pro.
Yeah.
And they basically are someone from the industry that remains anonymous and gives you unbelievable inside info. Mm-hmm. Imagine getting someone come out from inside FIFA who started up like inside FIFA accounts and they'd been keeping a record of what was been going on in the last 4 months. That would be a game changer.
Blatter would have their head on a spike.
Would he though? Has he got any powers left? He's got no spikes left, mate.
He's got nothing left, mate.
He's gone.
Speaking of Blatter, I tweeted something last night I found quite interesting. I was watching an interview with Gary Neville, who his Valencia team actually drew 2-2 with Real Madrid. And he said in the interview that he actually doesn't see his long-term future in football management. Because recently he's poo-pooed the chances of him maybe managing Man United one day or England. But now he's come out and said, no, I have a master plan. Because he's talked about this master plan quite a lot when he was getting involved in Salford, when he opened things like hotel football, etc. He's alluded to it, and he's never told anyone what the master plan was. But in this interview with Jeff Shreves, he said he doesn't see his long-term future in football management. I want to get that covered. I want to get that off the table. That's not what I'm here to do. So I was thinking, what does he want to do? I think he's going for Blatter's old gig. Gary really? Neville in charge of FIFA. Can you imagine that? It's either that or maybe like UEFA, like Platini's old job.
To be honest, I can imagine it. I mean, I didn't have the best opinion of Gary Neville as a footballer. This is probably something that people will agree with. He was a bit of an adversarial character, which made him the player he was. You know, he was big in the Man United dressing room. And basically, anyone that sided against him, he's pretty decent at steamrolling them out of his way. Obviously, we all found out a bit more about Gary's thoughts when he became a pundit on Sky Sports, which pretty much unanimously people think
people loved
was
him.
A very yeah. big success. And yeah. he's missed since, although Thierry Henry's upped his game recently. I've really enjoyed his speech about Guardiola and his philosophy recently.
Carragher, do you rate Carragher? Or?
Not so much.
I'm really not a fan of Carragher.
I think anyone really likes
I think
Carragher.
He's a bit aggressive. I mean, it might just be the way he talks.
They ask him a question, he goes like this. Well,
yeah.
He's always struggling with the answers. Yeah. Like, well, just get on with it.
With Carragher, I understand that there's an audience, a young audience of football that will need the explanation, or even an international audience that will need an explanation with analysis. But he talks to you like you're a 4-year-old. Mm. Like you've never understood the offside rule. Like you've never understood like why someone would have made that run. Where Gary Neville says it in a more of like your mate's telling you why it was a good idea. So that's why Carragher annoys me.
I just think, I don't know, I just completely switched opinions on Neville when I saw him on there. And coming back to the original question is, I think if he applies himself to it, I think he's got enough PR brownie points now. I think he's like, you know, providing Valencia doesn't go horrendously bad for him, he does something really bad, or they just do okay. I think that was pretty much a favour, wasn't it? It did to someone who's...
Well, Peter Lim, who owns Valencia, basically loves Gary Neville. So yeah. he's the majority shareholder in Salford as well. Yeah. And they've obviously got a relationship there, and Valencia was struggling. He brought him in. He had Phil Neville there already. Phil Neville was basically a glorified translator for his brother. He went out there. He's like, yeah, you could be the coach, mate. Secretly, he wanted Gary the whole time. Let Phil learn some Spanish. But
a well-paid translator,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah, he gets to hang out with his brother. But yeah, Gary's kind of always had one up on Phil, hasn't he? Better player. Mm. You know, he was always number one man at United. He was captain for United for a while. Phil Neville was on the outskirts of the team. Same for England. I remember when Phil Neville, was he gave away a penalty against Romania, I think it was, and I think Euro 2004, I'm going to say. Maybe Euro 2000, actually.
I think it might be 2000.
Yeah, it was Euro
against
2000.
Romania, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And ended up knocking us out in the group stage. So the way I feel about Phil Neville is the opposite as how I feel about Gary Neville. Mm. I liked Phil Neville as a player, particularly when he's versatile, particularly when he went to Everton and became a centre mid. Thought he was a bit of a lad, like strong central midfield player. And as a pundit, I feel like he's quite weak. I know he's not just a pundit anymore, he wants to go into management, but like, it's a complete contrast to Gary, who didn't necessarily... I mean, I liked him when he linked up with Beckham on the right-hand side and stuff, but didn't necessarily have any kind of real relationship or desire
I completely agree. Yeah. I think that mentality probably is, at the highest level, the difference between having a phenomenal career and just a good one, because that mentality gets you heard, it gets you seen. I mean, also, talking about the Neville brothers, obviously it's a brother-themed podcast, I also hear... I think it's true that the Neville brothers could have been professional cricketers.
Yeah, they're both really good at cricket.
Seriously talented.
And also
guys.
Their sister is the England Netball captain.
Neville, yeah.
And obviously their dad,
Neville
did die recently a few months ago, which is sad, but what a name. Neville Neville, we shall remember you. But yeah, enough about the Gary Neville. That's just a little theory I wanted to throw out there.
Yeah.
There's no proof to it whatsoever. It's purely come out of my mind. I'm just bringing it up.
Right now, I'd probably vote
years,
for him. With the opportunity
I'd vote
got,
for him.
I'd vote for him.
Well, it's better than the alternative, isn't it?
Do you think it's a FIFA or UEFA thing he'd go for? Do you think it's more of an FA?
Yeah, it's Greg Dyke. It's not a bad shout. Greg
Dyke. It's a run to the ladder, isn't it?
He could be a replacement for Greg Dyke. Because English people, FIFA, inherently, this is maybe under Blatter's reign, so it might be different in the future, but England have kind of been pushed out of FIFA. They don't really like, they have this Irish guy, who's one of the vice presidents of FIFA, or was. I guess it's all going to change now. But yeah, there's not many high-ranking English people in FIFA.
Haven't we got to wait and see who wins the Continental Cup before we find out who's the new?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That is a reference and a half. You may not be aware. We talked about it in another podcast, I think back in Fenwa,
yeah,
last one, about this. But yeah, Continental Cup was a little thing that we worked on, wasn't it? Which was a fictional telling of who would be the new president of FIFA. Check it out. There's a couple of videos of it on my channel. But yeah, okay. Well, I want to move on. We didn't really talk about Christmas yet, but just to explain, all of us, me, Seb Saunders, our respective significant others, and our mother and father all went skiing, didn't we?
We did.
Nice, enjoy it?
Loved
great
it.
Great time, yeah, it's good.
The only downside was we missed two West Ham games, both of which were wins.
Mm. Yeah, it was a shame.
I do a series on my channel, if you're not aware, where I take a camera with me to all the West Ham games and we vlog our reaction and stuff. And because we couldn't go to Liverpool, Southampton, we sent another YouTuber you may have heard of called Bazinga or Ethan. And he's got a great ratio. It was missing the food reviews, though. People were calling out for your food reviews, Seb. So we'll have to get them back soon.
Yeah, can't wait for that. I'm starving right now, so we could do one right now.
Yeah, we'll get some food soon, don't worry about it. But yeah, so good Christmas break. Lots of games, obviously, in football world. We sort of alluded to it just then, but a really good Christmas break for West Ham. My question for you with the West Ham stuff, because obviously we've got three West Ham supporters here, so we need to touch on it. And we haven't really talked a lot about West Ham in these podcasts before, to be fair, is how well do you think we can do? This is a question to both of you independently. Currently sitting in sixth. Lanzini's out again, but Payet's back. Carroll's firing, Valencia's looking good, Antonio's a revelation. You know, we've still got Reed to come back in defence as well. Where do you think we'll finish, and where do you think is the best we could finish?
I think that it was this time last season where I think we were in a similar place, fourth, fifth mark. I'm much more confident now, mainly because although we had those a bit of a drought in terms of wins, we had a lot of draws in a row.
Mm.
I didn't see that as a bad thing because all our attackers were out and it meant that we
ridiculous.
Weren't conceding. So we had a great defence that weren't conceding goals. And then as soon as we started dripping in these attackers back from injury, we're scoring again and we're winning again. So I'm massively positive. I think we can actually do pretty well. I would put money on now that we'll finish above seventh.
Really?
Yeah.
I put money on that.
The thing about that is I agree with everything you've said there, but where I worry is, if you look at the table, all the way down to 12th, there's not many points in it.
Very close, yeah.
But two back-to-back defeats and you're 12th. Simple as that.
That'll stop soon, though. It won't go on forever.
It will stop soon. But what I'm saying is, if you look at the league table now and you look at a fixture list and you say, oh, I'd like that game, I don't like that game, there's not many teams you actually want to play now. Sunderland, Villa, not even Newcastle.
But that goes
anymore,
both ways.
Of course.
You could say, I feel like we might beat these guys, but you feel like we could beat anyone. I mean, we've got 6 points off Liverpool, no goals conceded. You know, we've still got Arsenal, Man City to come at home, Man United to come at home, you know, obviously beating City and Arsenal away, drawing with United away. Mm-hmm. So we could potentially go unbeaten over two games against all those teams.
I just feel like it's impossible to predict if there's too many teams outperforming where they should be on paper based on wage spend or whatever, however you want to, you know, based on history. And I just think that it's the bookmaker's dream of a season. Mm. I mean, yeah, how much money they'd have made, God knows. But that is just impossible to predict. Who's going to win the league? I've got no idea. I mean, Spurs could win the league.
But look at Arsenal. Arsenal started to put wins together and then just got tonked 4-0 by Southampton.
Mental.
Who we then beat. It makes no sense.
I just got, regarding West Ham, I would love to think we definitely can finish above seventh. I mean, our squad is the best it's ever been. I'm thinking genuinely now, if you were to take the history of West Ham and you would think about not valuations, that's all relative to the time, but the quality of player, it's got to be up there with the best we've ever had. Adrian, I think, is a fantastic goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. James Collins potentially is now number one centre-back of his recent performances. We've got two international centre-backs behind him, Ogbonna and Reed. Ogbonna played on the bench in a Champions League final last year. Cresswell was a very progressive left-back. Midfield, we've got an abundance there. Mm-hmm. I do honestly think, we're looking at consistency, looking at injury proneness, we need a big striker. We need somebody that is going to constantly deliver goals. Andy Carroll's doing it right now. Will he continue? I don't know. One thing, this would be interesting to get your opinion on. How on earth is Dimitri Payet not in the French squad?
The reason he's not in the squad is because he signed for us. That is why.
Do you think?
The guy said it. He said if he had any ambition, he wouldn't have signed for West Ham. That's what the manager said.
But that's ridiculous, really.
That's a stupid comment.
I don't really agree with that. But you look at the French squad. I'm going to read out some names here. Cabella, Arthur, Valbuena, Matuidi, Sissoko. Obviously, Pogba's different. Morgan Schneiderlin. You know, they are good players, but if you ask a Premiership manager or any European manager, who would you rather in your team? All of those guys or Dimitri Payet? I don't think there's that many people that would pick them over Payet. Like,
the thing with Payet is, I know we whacked Liverpool about him and I've gone on the record saying how much a good he is. Listen, if you see what he did when he came on the pitch and he mugged off three players in about 3 seconds, right? This guy, and this is a part of the reason why, you know, and let's be honest about this, yeah? Yes, maybe the Payet better than Ozil comment has come back to bite me in the bum a little bit, right? But that's because of two things. One, Ozil's been unbelievable.
Yeah, he's been
record-breaking amount of assists, and it will be probably the most assists ever by the end of the season. He only needs five more, I think. He's got 15, I think, or 16. 20 is the record with Henri. No one's taken that away from Ozil. Since I made that video, he has absolutely proved me wrong. I'm hold my hands up and say that, right? But let's remember when I made that video. Yeah. Let's remember the context, the 2 years of football where I made that video. Ozil's never done anything like what he's doing now. So I wouldn't make that video now. There's no way. But I haven't changed my mind on Payet. Because part of the reason, part of the thing I was saying in that video, if you get behind the title and the kind of, you know, the headlines, is that I wouldn't swap them, right? And whilst it'd be a lot harder decision to make now, the reason I said that is, the things that Payet does, I've never seen anyone do for West Ham. And Ozil doesn't do these things. He'll get on the ball. He'll nutmeg two people in the space of a few seconds. He rarely loses it. Yeah. He's very, very industrious the way he runs around. Mm-hmm. These qualities are what makes him a spectator's dream. He can finish his goal. Yeah. He doesn't get the assists Ozil's getting, but he does score more goals. And these qualities are what make him so great to watch and what make him people like West Ham fans fall in love with him and write songs about him and whatnot. Ultimately, Ozil's living up to his world-class tag right now. He's the best midfielder in the league right now. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying he's not. But when I said that 3-4 months ago, he wasn't doing the things he's doing now. But I still feel the same about Payet. I think it's unbelievable.
So put you on the spot. Give me a position you think West Ham will finish. Both of you.
9th.
Seb says 9th. Wow.
Okay. And I'm happy with that as well.
Well, I would have taken 17th for the start of the season.
I'd like to... 7th.
7th. I'm going to meet in the middle. I'm going to say 8th.
Okay.
Right. Let's move on from West Ham. But I think we all agree it's been a great. Actually, one more thing I'd like to talk about West Ham while we're talking about is Andy Carroll, because 2 goals in 2 games, brilliant haircut. everything's going well for Andy. Should he go to the Euros? If he was to keep fit, realistically, he's not going to score 20 goals this season. He could score another 6, 7, maybe 10 if he's really good to the end of the season. Probably not that many.
I've got a pretty decent, strong opinion on this. I'm realistic. However, the money spent on Andy Carroll has proved to be a mistake from everybody who spent it, right? I'm just going to put that out there now. However, that money was spent for a reason. He is a very, very good footballer at what he does. The problem we have is he's injury prone and he makes you play a certain way. So in my opinion, when he's on the pitch, you have to play a certain way or else he's a wasted body, right? So he has to play for a team that are willing to play that way and negate maybe other flair players around him. Like, I'm not sure, okay, Payet could whip some balls in for him, but I'm not sure he's the way I would like West Ham to play. That doesn't mean it's not effective. Me, personally, yes, he should go to the Euros because he gives us another element.
That's the fourth choice striker.
If it's not working, he comes off the bench and we try something different. He's like the effective version of Crouch without maybe the on-ball stuff. He's so dangerous in the air.
Well, I'd say Crouch is effective as well. Crouch is past his prime now. Past his prime. If Crouch was still in his prime, he'd be someone that probably should go to the Euros because he offered the same thing. I think the key thing is no one in their right mind is saying Andy Carroll should start for England. No one's saying that. What we're saying is, who are the strikers for England in the Euros, right? Rooney will get taken regardless of form. He's a captain. Vardy should go on merit. The only question, and then Kane. Mm-hmm. The question mark for me is Sturridge, because everyone knows he's good enough, but he's a real injury problem. Mm-hmm. It's the same with Carroll. If they're both fit, let's say they're both fit and firing up to the Euros, you're not going to take 5 strikers. Your only option is you take 4 and you don't really count Rooney as a striker because maybe he's going to play in deeper. Is that something you would do if you were in charge of England? Would you take the other 4 and take Rooney as a midfielder, so to speak? To Seb first, who would you take as your strikers for England?
Harry Kane, Jamie Vardy, Daniel Sturridge, if fit, and has played at least 4 games. Doesn't have to prove his goal scoring, he needs to be playing, he's good enough. And Andy Carroll.
Do you take all 4, not including Rooney?
Correct.
You take Rooney separately?
Because Sturridge can be deployed wide. Andy Carroll is just a different enigma, has to go. And Kane is our best all-round striker, because he can play most roles, and he's scoring goals.
And Jamie, would you play 2 up front?
It's a lot harder question to answer. I probably would play, ideally, Vardy and Kane. So yeah, I'd play those guys, and I don't know if I would start Rooney. I think it all depends on the fitness of everybody else.
I mean, I'm pretty confident Rooney's going to start Rooney regardless.
Yeah.
Regardless. But the thing is, if you do drop Rooney back, right? Because now he's got to contend with the likes of Dele Alli, who's mm-hmm. very good at the moment.
Great coach.
And Ross Barkley, who's also mm-hmm. playing very well. So the way I see it, if it all stays the way it's going, the form of these three players continues, you say Kane keeps, Kane and Vardy keep scoring, you can't not play at least one of them, if not both of them together. And in that cam position, if you like, number 10, you got to play Ali or Barkley. Rooney is not, only got a goal, and it's a lovely backheeled goal.
I agree.
You actually would have to drop Rooney. The other off thing is what he risks doing then is he does what he started the last World Cup, and you start playing Rooney out wide. Stupid thing to do, because we've got much better wide players, and yeah, it's just a round peg in a square hole. But Saunders, is your four the same?
So yours was Vardy, Kane,
Sturridge, Carroll.
Mine is the same. It all depends on Sturridge again. But I think you made a really good point about a striker offering something different. There isn't, if you want that option that Carroll brings, there isn't anyone else better.
Yeah, but so you're both saying you would then?
Yeah,
you're both saying you would take Carroll, because I was putting it out there. I didn't necessarily think you'd agree.
I personally would, but I'm fully aware that I expect that to not be the general consensus.
Yeah,
It's a very biased thing for West Ham, but the reason I think there is that bias is because I see him more regularly than other people see him. Like, other people see him scoring a goal every now and then, that's it. But when you play him, he is a nightmare to deal with. And I think I say this when we play FIFA, when we play Football Manager, when we've had our bro up career mode and we think about selling Andy Carroll or not, the reason I say to you, let's not sell him, is because if we want to bring someone on to just lump balls into, literally you could spend all the money in the world and you can't find someone who's any better than him, maybe the same, at winning those
games. Yeah, because we're all in agreeance. He's the last man of the four you choose to start the game.
Yeah.
But And he'd always be on the bench, basically.
Yeah.
He'd always be on the bench, but he'd probably never come on unless you need him to. Do you remember against Sweden in the year 2012 when he came on and scored an amazing header? Actually, I think he started that game.
The other thing about being able to bring him on, right? And he's equally as important. He is your number one clearance from a corners moment guy as
well. True. Yeah, true.
If you're winning by a slender goal, you could take off a forward like Vardy, bring Andy Carroll on, and he'll just go and stand on the front post and clear every corner. He'd done it for West Ham. That is also a big element. He's probably better in the air clearing defenders than most centre-backs.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on from West Ham now. Let's talk about the January transfer window, which is now open for business. Mm-hmm. Very exciting time of the year. Not as exciting as the summer transfer window. Doesn't tend to be as much business done. Not as many players available to buy. Big clubs, you know, who do they buy at this stage? There's not many big players that want to always move halfway through the season. Let's talk about Jamie Vardy first. It's been a name that's been linked for a transfer move a lot. Should he go anywhere? Should he leave Leicester, first of all? Should he abandon them when they're doing so well? But ultimately, is that question relevant? Because if someone comes in and offers him enough money, they're going to be prepared to sell, right?
If I'm Jamie Vardy's wife, then he needs to go. Simple reason is, for the betterment of his family's life, this will be the last chance for a big payday. Mm. Now, I'm not saying that's the right way to do it. I don't want to sound like I'm a money-driven person. But for the financial stability, he's probably on, obviously, a very good wage deal. But he's in the...
But he could double his wage.
He could, or more.
It won't be high enough that he couldn't double it.
And he could get a long contract. Yeah. Right? Leicester are going to offer him money, but not like the same money that someone else will offer him. Now, for his football career, he should absolutely stay there. Because
guarantees he's going to keep playing. Start, yeah.
He's already in around the England team. He might not work in another side. We've seen it happen with great players move on, doesn't work out. But for his family's future, this is an opportunity to set him up and his children up for the rest of their lives. If he takes a big money move, long contract, signing on fee, he's sorted.
Sucking the life and soul out of football, that. But
that's the real world.
If he backs himself enough, why can't he do the rest of the season and do a summer transfer?
That's the thing, because if he does, well, he'll be 6 months older though, and he's already 28.
Why take the risk? If you're selling yourself as a commodity, you cash in when it's your most valuable. He can never be more valuable than he is now, only less.
All right, let's turn the question on its head. Who should buy him?
Well, I think before Christmas there was Man United rumours, wasn't there?
Yeah, and Real Madrid.
They've been in need for a striker since they got rid of all theirs.
Well, the thing is, forget Real Madrid, because I don't think that was ever genuine, but if he goes to Man United, like Seb said, does he guarantee a start? Is he going to start ahead of Martial, who they spent 40-odd million on? Is he going to start ahead of Rooney? Mm. He could go to United, and I'm sure he could get some goals there, but he would be like a Solskjaer guy. The problem is, again, like you say, he's not going to get the football. And it is one of two things. Because, yes, this is probably the last big contract he can get in. But also, this is his prime, the last year or so of his prime, maybe 2 years of his prime, to go and potentially risk that. How many players have we seen get a little bit of limelight and then move and not play? It's so heartbreaking. So we'll see what happens with Jamie Vardy. Another one I think is going to be probably the most rumoured name this January transfer window is Charlie Austin. Because he was, you know, everyone was talking about him in the summer. Mm. didn't end up moving, mostly because QPR put a big price on his head of 15 million. There was question marks about his knees. I think he's kind of put them to rest because he scored 10 goals. Yeah, he's clearly a very good striker. He's a goal man. He gets you goals. Again, he's not a world-class striker. He's not someone that's going to go and play for Real Madrid, but he could go and play for pretty much any team in the Premiership and do a job. Not necessarily as their first choice at Man United or Man City, but he'd be a very good squad player or a great starter at some lesser teams. So that no one's doubting his Premier League quality. The question is, who's going to stump up the cash for him? Are QPR going to be prepared to let him go for less than 15 million? He's been linked to almost every single team in the Prem. Mm. Do you think he's worth 15 million?
He's worth 15 million because I think he's going to get you, in a full season, 15 goals or more.
He's 26.
Yeah,
he's 26 and a half.
He's definitely worth it. Providing he does pass a medical. I mean, where that whole news thing came is that he did fail a medical somewhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, if he passes a medical, he's worth it. If he's, you know, we've seen it with so many players now. If they don't pass a medical, then his chairman are not going to gamble on him.
Aubameyang and Felipe Anderson are two players that have both been linked to Man United. Man United are a team that get associated with a lot of names because they need someone, really. They need some more attacking
quality. Them and Chelsea,
quality.
You think, are going to have a big... Especially now, Platini, one of the last things he did before, obviously, he's been sent to Coventry. That's a joke, by the way. Has actually gone to Coventry.
Maybe he has.
Maybe he has, but that's where he's hiding. But, you know, he did relax the FFP rules to state that providing you can... It's not just about profit and loss anymore. It's about if you can sustain a business model, if you can prove that spending X amount of money is a good long-term strategy, then, you know, basically it's a green flag for people to spend the cash again.
Mm.
So you've got to look at people like Chelsea United going big off the back of that.
Man United definitely need some help. Mm-hmm. Felipe Anderson is a very decent prospect at Lazio. Probably going to cost him 30-odd million. Aubameyang scoring silly amounts of goals in the Bundesliga for Dortmund. Mm-hmm. But he does love it there. He's recently signed a new contract. And Dortmund are notoriously good at holding on to people. Apart from selling them to Bayern, obviously they lost Goetze, Lewandowski to Bayern over the years. They've been very good at holding on to Marco Reus.
Yeah.
He's been linked loads. And people were amazed when he signed a new contract, especially after Klopp left. Or after it was knowledge that Klopp would leave. So maybe it would be quite hard to pry Aubameyang away. But
there's a good story about Aubameyang. So there's a story about a conversation he had with his dad. I think his dad passed away. And his dad's one wish was that he played for Real Madrid.
Really?
At any point. Mm. And Aubameyang came out and said that when it comes to moving, the only move I've ever had in my head for the future is that one day I want to play at Real Madrid.
Would Real Madrid want him though?
So would they want him? Is this the question?
The question. Well, let's move on from the transfer window. That's going to play itself out throughout January, and we'll probably see some late minute deals. Although I'm interested to see what Arsenal do, because you may remember I actually said in the video at the start of the year, because they didn't sign anyone apart from Petr Cech in the summer. I was sure Arsenal weren't going to win the league, and I said I'd get a Mesut Ozil tattoo if they won the league without signing anyone in January. So whilst they look like favourites to win the league right now, as long as they don't sign anyone big this January, my tattoo is
off the
table. The
future of your skin is huge if they need to spend money, basically.
If Ballon d'Or is going to be, next time we do the podcast next week, the Ballon d'Or would have been issued.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have a winner and we'll have the team of the year as well, which obviously is quite a big thing for FIFA as well.
Yeah.
People that are listening that like playing FIFA Ultimate Team, you'll know that every year when the Ballon d'Or and the FIFA team of the year comes out, there's special items in FIFA which you can get. So what I want to do, first of all, is see if we can decide who we think should win the Ballon d'Or, and then also together build our team of the year. So let's say that the three contenders are Messi, Ronaldo and Neymar. Who do you give it to, Sond?
It's always difficult between the two of them.
Well, who are you giving it to? That's why I'm asking.
I'd say it'd have to be Ronaldo purely because he's got the advantage of that gap that Messi had out to gain some traction and to get himself up there.
But Ronaldo hasn't won anything in 2015. Messi's won that treble. He's won the World Cup Championship. He lost the Copa America final to Chile on penalties.
Mm.
He could have won even more. So you're saying Ronaldo?
I think you made a good point about forgetting that it isn't just about a season, it's about a year, and with that goes off the back of last season.
Are you going to flip-flop on me now? You go to Messi? Weak. You're that weak.
Make a call, mate, and stick by it. Take your time.
No, I'm sticking Ronaldo.
Sticking Ronaldo.
Neymar.
Neymar?
Yep.
Over Ronaldo and Messi?
Correct.
Give me some reason.
I'll go Neymar. I think that Messi was injured for a large part of the year. I think that...
It's not his fault.
No, of course it's not his fault, but it affects his ability to play football.
Yeah.
So you can't win an award about playing football if you're not doing it. So Messi's been great, Ronaldo's been great, obviously. For me, for Neymar to flourish in the absence of Messi and to play alongside him and be as good as he's been, I feel he is worthy of that award this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think what he has achieved
for his ability or his world reputation is better. So if you say at the beginning of the year, people think this of Neymar, people think this of Ronaldo, Neymar has gone up in people's estimations more than Ronaldo has reinforced or gone up in other people. So for Ronaldo to continue to play well in 2015, although just because he has done it before doesn't mean it's less of an achievement, but what Neymar's done is more admirable in my opinion. I would like to see Neymar recognised. I'd like to break the trend as well.
He definitely will win it. You know how that trend has gone for 7 years?
It's crazy.
So in 2010, the Ballon d'Or merged with the FIFA World Player of the Year award. So 2008, 2009, it was still called the FIFA World Player. But Ronaldo won it in 08, Messi won it in 09, and since then it's been one of the two up to now. So that would be a seven-year trend broken. It will be broken eventually. Yeah, I don't think this is the year we'll see it, though. I think it will go to Ronaldo again. Okay, so let's move away from the three man, the three horse race of the Ballon d'Or. Let's make our team of the year. Okay, so we can make a team of the year, anyone from world football. We'll go with a 4-3-3 formation. We can agree on that. Mm-hmm. Starting off in goal, is there any real competition or debate here, or is it the big?
I think he's the big man, isn't it?
Big man.
Sweeper.
The big man with the big hands.
Get him in.
Manuel Neuer is going to be our goalkeeper. Okay, that's fine. That's the easy one to start off with. Now we need to work on what I'm proposing will be a four-man defence. We don't necessarily have to go left-back, two centre-back to right-back. That's one way of doing it. In the past, it's been done differently, though. Who's the first name on your defensive team sheet, Seb?
My first pick is going to be David Alaba of Bayern Munich. I just feel that Bayern Munich needs to be represented in there, if not maybe a couple of times. But David Alaba, his ability to score goals as well as all-round performance. I mean, I think he's my first pick quite comfortably.
Okay. Saunders, do you want to add a defender to the mix?
Yeah. Perhaps I'd stick Sergio Ramos in.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah. I feel like to be in the team of the year, really, your team should have, not necessarily mutually exclusive, but your team needs to have won something, really. There will be some that haven't. Because I think if you go Ramos, because Seb wants to put another Bayern defender in there, right? Because you're struggling, because you've got to have a Barcelona defender in there.
Yeah.
Because they've won everything. Mm. I think Mascherano is probably the one to do that, because he just embodies that bulldog spirit. He's like the opposite.
Well.
Yeah, he's like the opposite of like the flair part of Barcelona. And he's done really well for Argentina recently as well. They got to the Copa America final, etc. So if we're going to go Mascherano, and then we're going to go Ramos, we've only got one spot left. Mm. Does Ramos actually deserve it this year? I want you to look deep in your footballing memories. Not think about the Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid final where he scored from 2 years ago almost.
Yeah, if last you're picking calendar the best year, team, best defenders in the world, you might pick him. But for the last calendar year, I'd probably not go Ramos.
Like, do you put a Juventus defender in there? Like, they got to the Champions League final, they were very tight at the back. Chiellini perhaps could be one to look at here.
Well, I think if we're going to look at successful teams and how a player has been fundamental in that, let's look at Bayern Munich. So let's look at Boateng. Let's look at Lahm. There's two options. Let's go. But we're going.
I think Boateng will be in there personally. Yeah, I do think Boateng will be in there. I personally would like the back four to be Alaba, Mascherano, Boateng, and Chiellini. And that's three centre backs, but I don't think that really matters.
Chiellini's the one that I could be persuaded either way on, but I do also feel that it would be nice to represent Juve's.
Yeah, early, I mean, give me a replacement for him. Who else would you have in there?
The only other way you could replace him would be to go to Barca again. It'd be two Barca, two
Dani Alves, maybe.
Oh, I was going to say Piqué.
Piqué.
For his goal scoring. Because I do think that to have goals from defence is quite important.
I always like to have as varied a possible team of the year, because in the past it's been so La Liga dominated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So let's go with Chiellini, but we can readdress it later. Okay. So we've got our back four and our goalkeeper. Neuer, Alaba, Mascherano, Boateng, Chiellini. Let's move on to the midfield. We've got a three-man midfield.
Right.
Because we're going 4-3-3. Who's your first name in there, Saunders?
Going on the theme, we'll put Pogba in there.
You're putting Pogba in there?
I think Pogba's probably the first name on the sheet, okay. Midfield-wise.
So you're both agreeing with Pogba?
Yeah, Pogba's in there.
Okay, let's have a second one. Let's move on then. Who's next? Because I think this is hard this year. Because I think you've got to look at people. Mm. It's hard as well because of the formation we're suggesting playing 4-3-3.
Yeah.
We're looking at more central midfielders for this middle three. We're going to really struggle with the last three.
I'd like to propose Kevin De Bruyne.
Kevin De Bruyne.
Yep.
I think he deserves a shout as well. The season he had at Wolfsburg, and he's had a good start to City.
Yeah.
He's a Belgian. So we're going to go KDB?
I'd like to.
I think over the year, he deserves it. For sure.
Oh, if you go De Bruyne, you know, we've got to have a Barcelona player in there. For me, it's between Rakitic and Iniesta here. Mm. I'm a big Iniesta fan. I feel like we should have Iniesta in there.
I think Iniesta's a great player to have in there because I like Pogba for defence and moving forward. Iniesta sit and control the play.
The problem with this is, though, are we actually building a team?
True.
or are we bringing 11 players? Because I think it's a bit unfair on play if you don't go this. I know it looks like a team, but really you've got to go the 11 best players in the world. So I feel like
it has to be Iniesta.
I think it's got to be Iniesta, Pogba, and De Bruyne.
I agree.
De Bruyne is the one that you could argue because he didn't actually really win anything, but you could argue that his form. Yeah, it was really, and it's nice to get fresh names in there. We need a front three. We can't not have Messi and Ronaldo in there.
And it's got to be Neymar.
This is the problem. We're going to go Neymar. We're missing out on Suarez.
Yeah.
We're missing out on people like Robin, Alexis Sanchez, had a great season at Arsenal.
It's tough at the top.
This is the problem with this formation, but there's Zlatan. Gareth
I just
Bale.
Think it's Neymar, Ronaldo, Messi. I don't
Eden
think
Hazard
different.
Definitely has lost it the second half of the year. He's killed it for him. Yeah. You could argue, really, just take the front three of Barcelona if you were making a team for the chemistry reasons.
True.
You know, they work together very well. Ronaldo would probably upset the balance a little bit. Mm. So this is what I've got as our official team of the year. It'll be interesting to see if we get this right. Neuer, Alaba. We didn't really consider Jordi Alba, did we, at Barcelona? Anyway, Neuer, Alaba, Mascherano, Boateng, Chiellini, Pogba, De Bruyne, Iniesta, Ronaldo, Messi, Neymar. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4 players from Barcelona, 3 players from Bayern Munich. We've got 1, 2 Juventus players, 1 Wolfsburg/Man City player, and 1 Real Madrid player.
I can't believe West Ham didn't get in there. Andy Carroll,
Aaron Cresswell, left back.
One day. So we're agreeing on that team.
I personally like
submitting
that. Sounds like one hell of a team.
Right, that is out. We'll see how many we get right. I think we're going to get at least 8 of them right.
Yeah,
I'd like to think we could do that. Okay, well, let's move on from the Ballon d'Or banter. Before we find out more about you two specifically, I want to quickly touch base and talk about Football Manager quickly. Seb, we put some content up recently on the channel, which is our draft mode.
I'm not sure I want to talk about this.
Yeah, you did struggle in it big time.
Wind didn't go well for me.
Well, the reason I'm bringing it up is because we are about to do a second iteration of the draft.
Redemption.
Hopefully you're going to be looking for redemption. I noticed you've been practicing. I've seen it on Twitter. Not really telling me about it, but I'm obviously alert. So I know you've been practicing.
Practiced last night, a couple of draft modes.
Were you even drafting? Because we're going to have a new rule as well. Were you using the rule?
I was using the rule.
You probably practiced it. So I don't know, that's not very cool. I shouldn't have told you.
Cool.
I shouldn't have told you the rule.
Well, the fact that you told me within 48 hours before, I thought it was a bit sneaky. You probably knew.
I decided then. Yeah. Basically, the new rule is that last time we did it was a completely open draft. You can pick anyone you want in the world football to be in your team. Obviously, it was me, True Jordy, and Seb. You can't pick someone the other person picks, just like a real draft. Seb was terrible. One draw from 4 games.
What's most disappointing is that the game even agreed that I had the best team. So either my management was that bad, but statistically, there's like 5 categories. I won 4 out of 5 categories of which was the best team on paper.
Stats-wise.
So
you picked your team on stats, mate. You've got to have a feel for it.
The
new rule is going to be that every single player in our squad has to be from a different country.
Yeah, by the way, it's so difficult.
It's going to be difficult, particularly when other people are picking people that are going to make it harder. Also, to make it more interesting, we're adding a 4th person to this, which is Saunders. So Saunders is getting involved. That's why I'm bringing it up now. So we've got the 3 brothers plus True Jordy. It means they're going to have 2 extra games. So it's going to make, because 4 games went quite quickly last time.
Yeah.
So more chance to redeem yourself if you do start badly. But it also means it's going to be even harder to draft these teams because we've seen real random people from different corners of the world coming through.
Yeah.
All right, little plug for the Football Manager series there. Look out for it on the channel. Now I want to move on to the second segment of the show, if you like, where we learn more about our guests. Obviously, I know, this isn't like Akin Fenroll where I was talking to him and he was telling me a lot of stuff I didn't know about him. I pretty much know your life stories. However, our audience might not. So I want people to have a chance to learn more about you so there's a bit more context for when you appear more in the future. So I want to start, before we get really deep with it, I just want to ask you some quick-fire questions, both of you. Mm-hmm. And you have to just give me an answer really quickly. I don't want too much thinking about it. I just want the quickest, even if it's not the right answer, the first thing that pops into your head, okay? So I'll ask you one at a time. Seb, you give me your answer. Saunders, you give me your answer. Right, first thing, it's a stupid question because we know the answer, but who's your favourite team?
West Ham.
Who's your least favourite team?
Tottenham.
I'm worried we're going to get a copycat situation here. Right, we'll swap the order halfway around. Okay, yeah. So you both said you hate Tottenham.
Hate's a strong word.
Least favourite team. Okay,
don't want to get trolled.
Stitching you up here. All right, I'll go to you first this time, Tottenham. Okay. Your favourite player ever?
Paolo Di Canio.
Seb?
Michael Owen.
Really? I thought you said Beckham.
Michael Owen. For actual playing.
Okay.
Becker's my favourite man ever.
Right, okay, fine.
Favourite man.
Human. Your earliest ever football memory, Seb?
Wow. My earliest ever football memory was King George's playing field in Brentwood when I used to play up front for my team, Brentwood Boys, and Dad would incentivise me with Merlin stickers. So basically, however many goals I scored, I'd get a certain amount of packs. But
wrong-footed goals, I'd get more packs. And then the upper echelon for me to get packs was score a headed goal.
Mm.
I remember once scoring a headed goal.
It shares some context if they're not familiar with you. It's because you're...
Yeah, I'm not the tallest guy. So I'm sort of a... I'm an LF in... I'm an LF or an LW. So I used to play up front a lot, but as I got older, I moved more to the wing.
As you got older, you mean like as you went from like 7 to 10
So and when I played at uni and after uni I played more as a left midfielder.
This is Schürrle.
Yeah, people call me Schürrle quite a bit, you know, they say I look a bit like him, which yeah, I sort of can see it, but definitely similar to how I played. It was all about pace and was decent at finishing, but a headed goal for me was so rare because I'd normally be taking a corner or a free kick, so I'm not even in the box. But also, you know, it doesn't take much to outjump me. I think I got, you know, outjumped by the ref once. So, you know, I scored a headed goal. I remember getting 10 packs and I was literally sitting in the back of Dad's car opening his packs, and I got so many shinies, mate. I was buzzing my head off.
So that's your earliest football memory?
Well, the earliest problem, other than just kicking a ball in the garden, you know, proper football memory would be that, yeah.
Saunders, what about you?
Earliest, well, as you guys know, that my sort of playing football didn't really come into a lot later on in life, but I do have a memory of probably being about 6 or 7 years old in a very short stint, and by short stint, I'm about 2 weeks playing in a team. I was actually in goal.
I remember you as a
keeper. And Shaka Hislop jersey. Was my choice.
Great jersey. I mean, it doesn't have to be a playing memory.
Well, other memories are just going to West Ham at a really, really young age. I remember us losing, being in a mood, and then saying to Dad that he should just leave me there in the corner. Dad, he actually did. He actually did drive off, drove around the block, and then picked me up when I was in tears.
Thought you'd been abandoned. Yeah.
It's a good start to your football life, man.
Yeah. Right, let's move on. Let's go to favourite football memory. Again, this could be playing, this can be watching, whatever. Saunders, because you first.
Favourite football memory isn't actually West Ham related. It's a weird one. It's England related. It's when we went with Dad to Germany, to Gelsenkirchen.
Yeah.
We watched the England game. We unfortunately got knocked out against Portugal. But
famous game where Rooney got sent off, Ronaldo did the wink.
But the whole atmosphere of being in that game with all those England fans in such an amazing stadium with you guys and Dad.
Pretty crazy,
best football memory.
And what's a cool story about that is that we actually only found out we were going the day before the game. Do you remember? We were at school. I got a phone call from my dad. I was in history. And I answered it because I'm a lad. And he said, get your stuff, come home, we're going to Germany for the World Cup. And I was like, see you, suckers. I stood up, packed my bag, and I told my mates, and they were like, and the teacher was like, where are you going? I went, I'm not being funny, my dad's just told me we're going to the World Cup. And he was like, fair play, see you later.
I've got a similar story to that. It was in my, I think, maybe last year of university, and I was doing like a bit of part-time work in a mobile, home and mobile company, not to be named, call centre, where a lot of us from uni just did a bit of extra hours to get some money. And I literally was mid-shift, and got a phone call from Dad, and also because I'm a lad, I picked the phone up and literally quit my job there and then and walked out. I said, guys, it's like temporary hours anyway, through an agency. I was like, guys, I'm off. They're like, what are you on about? I was like, I'm going to the World Cup. See you later, suckers.
It's funny how football can affect your job. So I had an instance, same World Cup, after we'd got back from England being knocked out. It's previous to it, actually. It was prior to it, when we were in the group stage. And I was working, you may remember, I used to work at Domino's Pizza, right? Mm. And I was working at Domino's, and we had this boss who didn't... Obviously, pizza, Domino's industry is pretty busy during World Cups. A lot of people will order a pizza to eat while they watch the football. So he was real, like, kind of harsh on letting us have certain shifts. Like, we'd get our shifts, and I'd say, I can't have that one. It's when England are playing whoever in the group stage, or whatever, Sweden or something. And he'd be like, I don't care, you're not having it off. And that actually was the reason me and another guy actually ended up quitting Domino's, because he wouldn't give us enough time off for the World Cup. Right. So it does affect jobs, guys. Absolutely. It's a real struggle. So but what was your favourite football memory then?
So yeah, it's tough, because a football memory, to pinpoint it down, I sort of think, what's the most joy I've had? I mean, one of my favourite memories, I once scored 7 goals in a match for the school.
We're not talking about FIFA here.
No, this is real life. You know, I was a bit of a centre-forward in my day, although a younger one, a smaller one, should I say. A bit of a Michael Owen, so I used to model myself on. 7 goals in a match is hard to beat. I've never really got close to that since, although one was a penalty. However, my most joy I think I've ever felt is probably the West Ham playoff final in Cardiff, because I'd been there for the whole day. The whole town felt like it'd been taken over by West Ham. When we scored, Bobby Zamora got that goal. I mean, wow, that's just...
It's a good moment.
It was a great moment, just because the sheer thrill of it. You know, for a West Ham fan, you know, they called it the biggest prize in football financially, but just like West Ham are never going to get
West Ham winning something.
West Ham scoring a winning goal is like 3 points, like great. But that was like, felt like it was our cup final. It felt like our World Cup. Yeah. You know, it just felt like
we'd achieved everything there was to achieve. We could achieve at that moment. It was just unbelievable.
My main memory from that game, I don't know if you remember this, was when Danny Dyer hugged me from behind in the street. Yes, we'd gone up there.
That was great.
Your mate knew Danny Dyer. Yeah. You'd met with him before the game, but I wasn't 18 at the time, and you went in a par, so I couldn't go in you. So in
there, left you outside.
I stayed outside with my mate from Westcliff, Chris J, if you're listening.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, after the game, your mate again had texted Danny or something and said where we were. And so out of nowhere, this guy just like bear hugged me from behind and goes, "Come on, you beauty!" I was like, I recognise that voice. And it was Danny Dyer just grabbing me.
Amazing.
Good. But yeah, great football memory. Okay, to give like a one-pager, if you like, a quick review of your life. We'll start with you, Seb, again. She's the oldest one. The way I'd describe you would be that you played a lot of football as you were a kid. Did that going through school. Obviously went to uni, carried on playing football. From uni onwards, if you're in a job interview, give a skinny of your life, like up to now. You don't have to go super personal, but I think give people an idea of what you've been up to and who the man
so,
Seb is.
I did business and sport at uni. I was very lucky that I got picked to go straight into the first team of the football team. We played in a good league. We played in Bursa 1A in my first year. So that gave me a lot of confidence. And I feel that was quite a big part in my life because my uni was big, but not massive. So you could sort of be a bigger fish in a smaller pond. I ended up running for the student presidency. I was the president of the athletic union. So I basically, after I graduated, spent a year running all the teams. And I felt that being given that position and being regarded as a first team player, as silly as that sounds, gave you a bit of confidence. You felt like you were important. That, I think, took me very nicely into my working life. I got a job in sales. I worked for a company called Neopost, used to sell Franken machines in the city. That did me quite well. And then off the back of that, I started up my own business, which was in renewable energy, mainly solar panel installations. Did that for a little bit on my own with a friend, and then started working with Dad on that. And the company grew and grew over the last 5 or 6 years, and it's been really good. My life generally, I've always been very sporty. One thing I'd add into that is obviously started playing golf after university.
Yeah, that's pretty key.
Yeah, golf's been a big part of my life. It's sort of my big passion. I've had some good successes, you know, winning the Trilby Tour twice and winning some other Audi events, all amateur stuff. So golf's a big part of my life outside of work. That's a good little rundown, I guess.
And you've got a dog?
Of course. I'll tell you what, she probably won't listen to it, but in case I do, I should probably mention that at university, I met Gina, who's now my fiance. We've been together 10 years next year and we're getting married, and you two are both my best men. So I'm looking forward to that.
One is better then?
Yeah, I was going to say the same.
I'll let the audience decide.
And we should probably plan something for that wedding, by the way. So yeah, we haven't really talked about that. We should probably do something, get some party poppers or something. All right, same question to you, Saunders. It's a bit more fresher in the memory for you because you are. Well, you actually haven't mentioned that. So we are all 3 years apart. So Seb. Yeah. He's 3 years older than me. Mm-hmm. Can I say how old you are?
Yes, I am.
He's 42.
That means you're 39. Yeah,
No, Seb's 30, I'm 27, and Saunders is 24. Yeah. We're all 3 years apart. And we think it'd be more interesting if we did hear a bit more pre-university from you, mm-hmm. because you actually had quite a lot. You've had probably more, I'd probably say out of the three of us, your interests have changed more dramatically, specifically in your pre-university time. So to set you off, my main memory of you growing up when you're sort of 11-12 was you're really into the army. Really into, you know, army cadets, and you loved shooting things with your BB guns. You had a ridiculous collection of BB guns. Nice. Like literally, your drawer underneath your bed, you pulled it out, it's like an armature, it's like from James Bond, like Q, when he gives me his different gadgets. You had like a laser sighted sniper rifle, you had like so many different guns.
Dangerous
man in the Essex countryside. But
North Essex countryside.
Yeah. What talk to us from then onwards.
So yeah, as you said, I was massive into the army. I was almost dead set to be an engineer in the army. I had a massive obsession with helicopters as well, so I wanted to once I realised I couldn't fly them because I didn't do the qualifications you need to do at school, I wanted to repair them. And then I sort of fell out of love with that and moved on. And then I, not in a cheesy way, then I found music, as you could say, but I started playing guitar and drums and singing and stuff. And that was like that was my next fad. That was what I was going to do then. I wanted to be in a band.
You say fad, it lasted quite a while. Still exists now. It's not like you don't like it anymore, but you were properly into it for a number of years.
Yeah, so I was in a fair few different bands. Then I started university. And interestingly enough, I actually started university to do the course of music production. of which I changed about 3 months before I went to the University of East Anglia and changed it to media and film and TV. And then that entered up to the world that I'm in now.
So what was originally changed that? Because some of our listeners may be of that age, so making their decisions in the next few months.
Yeah, I mean, it was... The passion was in music production. I wanted to sort of, at that point, I wanted to not necessarily be in bands, but I wanted to be a producer. I wanted to be making other people's records and do things like that. But what changed for me is that I thought that is very narrow. I'm putting all my eggs in one basket there. I've got interest in filmmaking, interest in TV and stuff. Maybe I should explore that, because if I did something like media, film and TV, that doesn't cancel out music. Whereas if I just did music, it kind of does cancel out the rest. So I decided to go for a more open option, and I'm pretty glad I did, to be honest.
Yeah, because now you've actually ended up not so much working in the music environment as the film, TV, production.
Exactly, yeah.
Did you also mention you were head boy at your school?
Yeah, it was. It's head boy. It's pretty decent, it's pretty to be decent. Fair.
By unanimous vote of
only
of
one
year
person
and
in school can be head boy, and he was it.
Fair, well done. Let's give him a round of applause. Well done, mate. Well done. So yeah, and then you went to uni. You did that, and then what happened after uni?
So while I was at uni, I got a job in a production company in Norwich where I studied. So I started making videos and YouTube videos there, and not so much, you know, front-facing YouTube videos, more like corporate stuff for companies and brands and that. And then I moved from that into working in fashion for a year. So I worked for ASOS for a bit, doing their
videos. Let's put that in perspective, because that makes it sound like you've got like good fashion sense. Like you weren't really doing any of that stuff. You weren't like deciding anything. Like you were just filming people that knew what they were doing.
Well, I'll counter that with at our end of uni awards, I did get the best dressed. So.
You won everything, buddy. Best. Who's voting for this stuff? I think we've got a rigged. It's this guy doesn't have
rigged. Man, a few busy months.
Yeah, exactly.
So the whole media working in video stuff led to doing video for ASOS, and then ASOS led to doing videos for football channels, so like Chelsea Fans Channel and the Football Republic and all stuff like that. And then that led on to me being like, hang on a minute, I'll have a go at this myself, and then started making my own stuff.
Yes, and you've got your own YouTube channel now.
I have, yeah, Saunders Says.
So something that Seb failed to capitalise on, because Seb's been in loads of my videos for a long time. Everyone always goes, when are you going to start a YouTube channel?
And he's never done it.
He's never done it, but Saunders actually has one.
Yeah, I think with me, with the question I get an awful lot, and I would love to do it one day, it's picking the right moment and what have you, but also, you know, my YouTube channel realistically would be about golf, and it's just whether or not really there is that appetite there. To hear me talk about golf. You know, I'm not a professional golfer. Yes, I've achieved some good things in the amateur game, but I'm not a professional coach or anything like that. So it'd be just me. Who knows? Maybe if I get enough people telling me I should do it, maybe
that's
one day
like
I will.
Me saying I'm not going to start a channel because I'm not the best FIFA player in the world, or I'm not a footballer.
No, true. There's a big market on YouTube for football related content. Absolutely, you know, rightly so. Golf may get there at some point, but you know, right now there's other things that I'm focusing my time on.
Yeah, you're a bit further on in your career as well. But the reason I bring it up is that now I have the opportunity to actually plug Saunders' YouTube channel.
Very true.
There's no YouTube channel. Plug your Twitter.
Plug my Twitter. Plug your Twitter. Instagram.
But no, Saunders Says is your YouTube
Saunders
channel.
Saunders Says, yeah.
Describe it to our listeners.
It's very much a lifestyle vlogging channel. So I'm sort of vlogging the stuff I get up to. A lot of it is around travel, because obviously we're going to different places to do stuff. I've been lucky enough to travel quite a lot in the last year or so I've covered as much of that as I could, and hopefully that going forward is going to be what I'll be doing. So travel meets lifestyle meets me doing cool things.
Some very good
some of your recent stuff's unbelievable.
I'd have to say, brilliant. This is not me saying because you're my brother or whatever, I'd have to say, like, of all the I feel like by calling yourself a lifestyle vlogger, which is exactly what the content is, you almost do yourself a disservice in many ways, because there's a lot of other people that do that which don't do what you do, which is if you are interested to check his channel out, do have a look at it, because some of the stuff you've done, like with the drones and stuff, in basically drone. Because you've got an actual background in making films and making content, it means your content actually looks really good. I know Casey Neistat's someone you look up to a lot. But like that stuff. So when Saunders does a vlog, he does a vlog. You know what I mean? Like
capital V.
We're not just talking about like holding his phone up and talking down. There's obviously there's you chatting and stuff like that. But some of the visual stuff you make is unbelievable, mate. So make sure you check it out. Saunders Says. And then Seb, you're on Twitter.
I'm on Twitter, yeah, at SebCBrand4, same on Instagram. The other thing we could plug is renewable energy business.
Come on. If you want some solar panels.
Put some solar panels in your house or on your building.
Get in touch with Seb's Twitter.
Yeah.
No, seriously, though, yeah, she might be wanting some renewable energy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, mainly what we do now is large-scale commercial installations. So people want an
loads of solar panels, save money, earn money on your roof. I'm your man.
Right, get on Twitter if you want, Seb C Brown 4 if you want to talk more about that. That's pretty much it, our time for today, guys. Thank you for both joining me. Pleasure. It's been good to, I'll say, I'll get to know you more, but I obviously knew everything. It's actually been quite boring for me, really. But for the people listening, hopefully it shed some light on your respective lives. They're going to see more of you on the channel and stuff moving forward. So it's important to understand Seb and Saunders. We've got to say a big thank you to DreamTeamFC.com. of course, who do sponsor this podcast and make it all possible. Also, one thing I wanted to mention as well, guys, is you may have seen before Christmas, we did our what we call bench warmers, brand new panel show type thing. We tried it out before Christmas. Just want to hear people's reaction to that because we want to do more of them. Seb, you're a special guest in that. It seems like it's gone down really well on the channel.
Oh, it was great fun making as well. I mean, yeah. It's brilliant. I think it's different for YouTube in this sort of space. I think the way it went was exceptional. All the guests were really funny. Mm-hmm. Seems to have done well on the channel as well. But I think if we can find the right way of doing it, it's something we should make a lot more of.
Yeah, so special thanks to Dream Team as well for making that possible. So dreamteamfc.com is where you can see my weekly blogs on there. And that's about it. We'll see you next week. Got another guest lined up for Spencer FC podcast. Make sure you leave a rating and a review on iTunes as well, guys, because it really helps us to get your feedback and your response. And if you're enjoying the podcast, if you can do that on iTunes, I recommend a 5-star rating. Other ratings are available, but 5-star is preferred. And then obviously let us know what you think about it in the review/comment section below. But that is it for this podcast. We'll see you soon. Until then, don't go changing.